Welcome to Sunday Morning, a news and public affairs programming service of Cox Media Group. I'm your host, Mimi Lawson. I have Andy Kramer with me. He's the Director of Development for Southeastern Guide Dogs in Palmetto, Florida. And I had asked you before we started the interview, what does a Director of Development do? Do you develop the dogs, the people? What's your job, really?
Well, it's funny. I mentioned it. I'm the Director of Development, which is code for Director of Fundraising.
Ah.
And I swear, Mimi, if I put Director of Fundraising on my business cards, I don't know how many people would take my call. Or meet with me. I'm just kidding. But no, it's development and resources. But it is Director of Fundraising.
I do these interviews all the time we are a public affairs show, obviously, and to serve the public. And one of the things that we be careful of is that we don't do any kind of, anything that can be considered a for-profit a business. Southeastern Guide Dogs, in fact, the last time I talked to you guys, you had just been named Nonprofit of the Year by the Tampa Bay Business Journal. What is the difference, Andy, between a for-profit company and one that's not, besides the obvious?
I'm so glad you asked that, Mimi, and I think it's a wonderful question, and what many people might be kind of wondering. So let me explain it this way. Obviously, a for-profit company is looking to make a profit, and with that profit, either the owner of the business or shareholders of the business would reap the rewards of anything in excess of their expenses. We, too, have a budget that we need to have funded. Not that we make a profit, but we certainly have to try to fund our operation. And we do that through the generosity of donations, whether that be individuals or businesses, family foundations, donor-advised funds. We have a budget that we need to have funded. The difference is what happens, what do we do with that money? Our money gets reinvested back into the organization. That could be in opportunities of growth. It could be expanded programs. It could be new facilities. But it's what you do with your excess revenue or your money that you bring into the organization which distinguish us differently from a for-profit. Our money does get reinvested, not in the hands of shareholders, but reinvested back into the organization to improve our services to the clients and constituents that we serve.
And one of the reasons why the Tampa Bay Business Journal named you Nonprofit of the Year is because of the way you use that money. In fact, tell us some of the things that have happened just this last year. I know you've added a couple buildings and so many other awards because it is an awesome I've been involved with this, charity now for a while. Just an awesome operation. It's amazing that the amount of people work as hard as they do.
Well, and first let me say thank you for being one of our wonderful puppy raisers. You know, many organizations.
It's my pleasure.
Claim that they cannot run their organization without volunteers, and many of them absolutely could not and not. And if it wasn't for puppy raisers like you, Mimi, we could not. We could not run our operation. We have 250 puppies that are born on this campus every year that when they hit 10 weeks of age have got to go home with someone, have got to go home with someone who will love them and care for them and start their basic obedience training and teach them good household manners in order for them to build that foundation so that when they come back to campus when they're about a year and a half old, that they can now go into their college years and start learning how to become a guide dog. But your question as to what we've done, we think we have kind of a magical place here. And it's not quite Disney, but when people come into our gates, it is such a loving and embracing and welcoming campus that people fall in love with us. And one thing, unfortunately, that many nonprofits have to do is fund their annual operating budget and their operations, and they can't always invest in their infrastructure. That could be facilities, that could be technology, that could be staff, but they don't always have the wherewithal and the ability to put money back into the organization and especially into their facility. And what we've been so blessed, and since your last interview last year, we opened up our brand new veterinary hospital here on campus, which allows us to do so many procedures and surgeries and things that normally we would have had to have taken our puppies and dogs off campus to other veterinarians. Now we have the fortunate opportunity to do all of that in-house.
And I got to tell you, Andy, as many dogs as I've had over the years, I have dealt with a lot of veterinarians, and you have one of the best vets that I have ever run into in all the years that I've ever been involved with dogs.
Well, thank you, and we think so too. Dr. Conrad
is
just
awesome.
Wonderful. And now he is so fortunate to work in probably one of the most state-of-the-art veterinary hospitals that there is. I mean, we have everything that he would need to really provide exceptional care to our puppies and to our dogs. And that was one of the buildings that we had finished and opened last year. Another one that we just opened up in 2014 was the Canine Assessment Center, right. The Keith G. Hurst Canine Assessment Center. And if you weren't in kind of the know as to what the significance of that building was, you might be a little shocked that we would even have a building like that. But when the puppies come back from our wonderful puppy raisers, they go into what we refer to as the freshman dorm. It's the Canine Assessment Center. Yeah. And it's where our trainers and where our veterinary staff start evaluating the dogs to determine which of them are good candidates to become guide dogs. Our veterinarians look over them literally from head to tail, their hearts, their ears, their eyes, everything, to make certain that they are so healthy, that they are the best of the best. We want to be certain that we give our visually impaired students very healthy dogs, one, so they don't have an expense of care when they have them, but also so that dog can serve them for a long time, hopefully for 8 years. So we want to make certain we start with very healthy dogs. Then our trainers assess those dogs for their temperament, their intelligence, and their trainability. Would this dog have what it takes to become a future guide dog? We certainly don't want to invest too many resources into a dog that doesn't have the ability to go on and become a guide dog. So we start that decision-making in the assessment center, and it's such an important building, and we're blessed that the community has rallied around that campaign and helped us build it.
Well, and I was there for the dedication of it, and I, like I said, have been around dogs and dog facilities, University of Florida. I've done some research projects with them, veterinary research projects. And when I saw how you guys work the whole system, I was so, impressed is a word, but I almost hate to say that because it just didn't encompass what I felt. And you're right, it is a magical place. You get a real feeling there that everybody is working for really the greater good, and we all want that in everything we do, but it doesn't often happen. I see it happen down there.
Yeah, and I think you're right. And many people who do work in nonprofit have a heart of gold, and they're there because of the cause and because of their belief and passion for it, and not because of a paycheck or because of anything else. And you're right, it's no exception here. The people who work here love dogs, love seeing the lives that can be transformed because of the dogs, and everyone here wants to be here. It's a very happy place. And what we're really excited about now, probably the single biggest project that this organization will ever have in its history, is a new student center. So yeah. When the visually impaired submit an application, they get accepted to campus, which means we think we have a perfect dog just for them. They have to come here and be trained now. The dog is ready to go. It knows over 40 commands. It is a certified guide dog that is just waiting to be matched. And when those people come to campus, they have to learn now how to work with that guide dog.
And that guide dog, let's mention, has now, since the time it's left me or any other puppy raiser and been assessed, as we were talking about, been through how much training?
Well, between 4 and 6 months of harness training with a certified trainer, and they have gone, into the community, learned many of the commands that absolutely have to be met in order to be able to put one's life in the hands or in the paws of that dog.
Right.
And one of the most important ones, and I know you know this one, Mimi, it's called intelligent disobedience.
How I have raised dogs in the past, it really was an eye-opening experience for me to learn this concept as well.
Right, and some of it we can train, and some of it the dog has got to have the intelligence to do, and that is if a handler, if a visually impaired person gives the dog a command that would put that person in harm's way, the dog will disobey the command, mm-hmm. which is amazing. They will disobey the command. For example, if a visually impaired guide dog user was going to walk into the street and they were listening for traffic very carefully, and they thought it was clear and they gave the forward command, but they couldn't hear the electric car or the hybrid that was coming, but the dog could see it, the dog would not go forward and would disobey the command and hopefully save the life of the handler and them as well.
It's amazing to me to watch the intelligence of these dogs and be able to watch them work and do the things they do. It really is it's a thrill that goes through you when you watch the genesis of these animals and then what they end up meaning to somebody. When somebody asks me, how can you let her go? That's the thing I point to every single time.
Well, and Minnie, I have never been a puppy raiser, so God bless you for doing it for us. I love dogs. I have one under my desk right now,
right.
And I can only imagine how challenging it would be and difficult for some to be able to love a dog the way that our puppy raisers do and then to turn them back into us because it's for a bigger purpose. Mm-hmm. And so when I thank you and I say God bless you, I mean it, Mimi. It's really a special thing you're doing for us.
Well, one of the reasons that we're talking to Southeastern Guide Dogs again today is because the annual walk in Vinoy Park is coming up on February 28th. But, you know, this is one of the reasons, you know, is we want volunteers. We want people, obviously, to make donations. I mean, you know, we're not trying to hide that at all. When you talk about, you know, some of the ways that you can help, this is one of them. And being a puppy raiser is not an easy thing, but it really is an amazing transformation to watch a dog that you have cared for like that and turn them over and to watch them change somebody's life is really something you can't explain. You have to have it happen to you.
You know what? And we often refer to our dogs as superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
And we also refer to our supporters and our volunteers as superheroes. And we actually kind of chuckle about this, that everyone has a superhero strength. They just may not know what that is yet. And in your case, your strength and what superhero power you bring to us is, you know, volunteering as a puppy raiser. Others might love to help organize or raise money for us.
Mm-hmm.
Others might have the means to write us a check. Everyone has a special superhero power. And sometimes we just have to help them identify what it is and then invite them to be a part of the family.
Well, let's do that right now. Let's give your website and extend that invitation.
Wonderful. So the walkathon is coming up on February 28th. And although we have 7 walks this year, but the one that we're talking about is at the Vinoy. And we welcome everyone. This is a very family-friendly, kid-friendly, and dog-friendly event. So unlike other walks where absolutely not, you couldn't bring your four-legged family member, we actually encourage it. And it is so wonderful to see a sea of people walking for a wonderful cause and to see, in many cases, their best friend or their family pet, you know, with them at the event. It's just kind of a neat thing. So people can get involved by making a donation, or they can help raise money. Many of us know friends or family or, you know, colleagues that might help toward a contribution because of the passion and love that they know you have for animals or for what you're doing. And if people can go to, you know, guidedogs.org, or the Walkathon website as well, they can make a donation in tribute to someone or to help out a friend reach their fundraising goal. There's just a lot of opportunity to involve people. And not only this year, I mean, like many walks, what is so special is this walk is organized by a committee of volunteers, people who live in the St. Pete area that want to give back a little bit. And there's sponsorship and logistics and recruitment and all the things that comes with putting on a walk. And if someone wants to join us this year and then think about taking on a role to help us organize it again for next year, oh my God, that would be fabulous. We have everything for them.
You know, we could have spent, as I said, 3 hours talking about all the things that fascinate me about this whole organization and the dogs and how they relate to people. But I want to thank you for spending the time that you did with us this morning. Andy Kramer, the Director of Development at Southeastern Guide Dogs, has been our guest this morning, and you have been a great plethora of information for us.
My pleasure, Mimi. Thank you so much for all you do.
You know, I want to ask one more thing. Do we have, like, amount of money that we are trying to raise? I mean, do we have a goal this year?
I, as the Director of Development, I'm probably looking at the larger goal than the individual event goal.
Okay.
I'm sorry, but I know that our total goal for all 7 walkathons is $865,000.
Wow.
Which is about 10% of our annual budget. So when people think about getting involved with something or, you know, is my contribution or my donation going to make an impact? Is it going to matter? In this case, our walkathons bring such a valuable part of our overall funding that, yes, people's support makes a huge impact.
And it's awesome to always hear, and I have a tendency to do this to everyone who comes in, and of course, this is one of the reasons why we talked this about the nonprofits in the beginning of the conversation, is that I want to know where my money goes. I want to be able to reach out into the community, as many of us do, but get concerned that 80% of our money, 80 cents out of every dollar, is going to administrative costs, and that is not the case here.
No, actually, 86 cents of every dollar does, which is a fabulous number and percentage to report. And one other thing is that charities, many nonprofits, do most of their communicating through mail or on TV or kind of from a distance. We would invite anyone who is ever interested in seeing where your money goes and how it's spent and the impact that it's making to come to our campus in Palmetto.
Yes.
Do puppy hugging, take a tour walk the campus, check out one of our adult dogs that isn't being trained that day and take them for a walk, meet the staff and the volunteers who are on campus, and really get a feel for the organization that you're supporting. It really makes a difference.
As we come back to Sunday morning, the next person we're going to talk to from Southeastern Guide Dogs is Michael Jernigan. Good morning, and I'm glad you could join us this morning. I'm very excited to talk to you.
Thank you very much. I'm excited to be here.
Tell us what part you play in Southeastern Guide Dogs. It's a part that we talked to right before we started talking this morning that really excites me, is using these dogs to help veterans. You just started with Southeastern Guide Dogs, didn't you?
Actually, I co-founded the Paws for Patriots program with one of our Southeastern Guide Dogs board members named Bobby Newman back in January of 2006. And that's when I first got affiliated with the organization. In fact, when I graduated from college in May of 2012, I came to work at Southeastern Guide Dogs, and I was here for about a year and a half. I took a year off and moved out to Texas, and now I am with Southeastern Guide Dogs. I'm very happy to be back.
Well, I'm very excited about Paws for Patriots. Let's talk a little bit about why that is part of Southeastern Guide Dogs, because obviously it is not the same thing as a guide dog.
Well, it is actually. Paws for Patriots is a multi-level program. We kind of identified a need to reach out to a lot of the veterans coming back in the current combat situations in Afghanistan and Iraq. That's what prompted Bobby to reach out to me. Veteran service dogs are one aspect. Guide dogs are another aspect. Also facility therapy dogs. So what we do is with visually impaired veterans, and just so you guys know, this is actually all programs are open to all veterans. It's not just Iraq War and Afghanistan War veterans. Visually impaired veterans get guide dogs through our program. We also have veteran service dogs, which is very unique. Those are dogs that help mitigate the triggers and stress of post-traumatic stress.
I was telling you, Michael, before we started, that what I saw with a guy that came in here to do a PSA show with me from Wounded Warriors, I didn't understand what the dogs did. And then he was talking about some of his experiences and the things that I saw the dog do. It took my breath away.
Well, I'll tell you, Mimi, I myself am blind. I'm actually the first U.S. service member to lose both eyes in the global war on terror. And I got Brittany, my guide dog, back in March of 2007. I was living in Washington, D.C. at the time, and it became very apparent to me fairly quickly that Brittany was really a guide second and a companion first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and with that bond there, it helps with stressful situations. You're never alone. You have that furry friend right there next to you that gives you unconditional love no matter what.
And one of the things, I'm a puppy raiser for Southeastern Guide Dogs, that we teach as rudimentary training is to a dog that is able to sit still for long periods of time, because I don't think people understand that, as you say, that's a companion, a best friend. That dog is going to be with you 24/7 and needs to know how to just hang out is one of the things.
I will be honest with you, my dog occasionally snored in class while we were in college.
I love that. Yeah. So tell us more about the Paws for Patriots. I know that you're talking about obviously guide dogs for returning veterans, but that's not the only part of this Paws for Patriots.
Veteran service dogs are the dogs that go with veterans that have post-traumatic stress.
Right.
And what they do is they really and truly help mitigate those trigger symptoms. So for me, an instance, when I was walking around the campus of Georgetown University, when I was going to school there, it would get very crowded. It was difficult to get around, especially that campus being integrated into the neighborhood in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
I would get stressed out. And Brittany would know when I'm getting stressed out. And I remember walking past the Levy Center at one point there, and Brittany just stopped. And I was like, oh, I wonder what she's stopping for. There's an obstacle or something like that. And she put her nose, like her cold nose, on my hand and just kind of flicked my hand up. And what she was doing was she was trying to get me to pet her. And I kneeled down and I started petting her. And then all of a sudden, my stress, my tension just started to really unwind, like a spring uncoiling.
That's so amazing.
I was able to regroup and move forward and had a great day. You know, and it's those type of interactions that really make those dogs special. We also have facility therapy dogs at active duty military hospitals like Camp Lejeune, Marine Corps Base. We pioneered the therapy dog program at Walter Reed Army Hospital, which is now Walter Reed National Military Medical Center. I think we have 5 dogs there that work not only visiting room to room, but work in the physical therapy and occupational therapy departments. So having gone through a lot of physical therapy and occupational therapy myself, I will tell you it is very easy to tell a human being to to pound sand that you don't want to play today. But when that, it's true, I hate to say it, but when that dog walks up to you and it's got a ball in its mouth and all you want to do is like play fetch, it's hard to tell that dog no. And a lot of people start playing with the dog, and what they don't realize is that a veteran on a new prosthetic leg is learning how to balance, is learning how to take steps, is learning through physical therapy without even realizing it, just interacting with the dogs. And at Andrews Air Force Base, our dog has actually identified 5 different people in the waiting room for the mental health clinic that after interacting with the dog came forward and told the counselor that they were contemplating suicide.
Oh,
and
my gosh.
If it hadn't have been for that dog at that moment, they really probably would have gone through with it. So there's definitely a connection, not only physically with these dogs, but there's a mental connection with these dogs, and they're so gentle, and they know. They know when you're hurting, and they know when you're having fun, and they know how to guide, and they just know.
I think that PTSD has been an ongoing problem for many more years than our country has been able to deal with or admit. And it's amazing to me and heartwarming to me, ironically, that we're able to use these animals to be able to alleviate some of this stress and to heal some of those wounds that another human being, while they can reach out to a person, it's not the same thing as you just told us. It's a whole different...
One of the interesting things, and it's a dilemma for combat veterans, is a lot of guys don't like to talk to people that haven't been there or done that.
Exactly.
You know, I've got a friend of mine that has a veteran service dog, and he talks to his dog just like he would talk to a counselor, but he doesn't feel comfortable in a mental health clinic. And he literally will sit there in his living room, sitting on a couch, talking to his dog, explaining to him the stress in his life and what he went through and the feelings he goes through on a regular basis. And the dog just sits there and listens.
Of course.
You know, the dog knows that it's serious time and that this guy's opening up, and the dog's there with emotional support. And I mean, those are the type of differences it can make. Luckily, we're becoming more aware of the stress and triggers of post-traumatic stress in the regular world. And quickly, we're starting to learn how to mitigate a lot of that. And I do believe that the dogs are a great addition.
So if somebody has a service member, a family member, or if they themselves feel like they could benefit from this program, should they contact you directly?
I think the best conduit would be our website, guidedogs.org.
Okay.
That's guidedogs with an S. .org, and they can read more about our programs there, and they can also read more about Southeastern Guide Dogs and understand what we're about and how to get in touch with us directly and how to fill out applications, and they're all online.
We were talking to Annie Kramer a little earlier in the show about the walkathon that's coming up. In fact, we'll be talking to Nina after you. Will you be at the walkathon on that Sunday, the 28th of February?
I am not. So we have 7 walkathons.
I know.
I'm not sure which ones I'm supposed to
be at. That's the one
at.
In St. Petersburg,
I will go out on a limb and say yes, considering I live 5 minutes away from the location.
Okay.
So I know for sure I'll be at the St. Petersburg Walkathon.
Well, and I saw a picture of you recently in the newsletter with your dog, and she's awesome. And I'm so excited for this program down there, and I really appreciate you and glad that you have joined Southeastern Guide Dogs.
Thank you very much. The program for me is much more than just employment. I mean, it really was the difference maker in my life. And Brittany, my guide dog, I just retired her. I'm waiting to get another one. It was a lifesaver. And I would not be here today where I am with the successes I've had in life if it wasn't for her by my side.
And isn't that an amazing testimony? That's one of the reasons why I wanted to know if you were going to be at the walkathon. Invite a lot of veterans to come out and meet you. Heard a lot about you, wanted to talk to you, haven't met you myself, so I'm hoping I get a chance to meet you down there. That I just know that if somebody is having these problems, that reaching out to you could be the beginning for them.
Yes, ma'am.
We appreciate you coming. Michael Jernigan has been our guest, our second guest this morning from Paws for Patriots at Southeastern Guide Dogs. As we move into our next interviews with Southeastern Guide Dogs, we've got Nina Iannotta. She's the walkathon manager on the phone. I know we've got a walkathon coming up in Vinoy Park. That's the one that I'm involved in St. Petersburg, but there are 7 of them, aren't there?
Correct. We have 7 this year and a goal of $865,000.
It sounds like a lot of money.
It is, but with the participation and the ever-growing communities around the state, we are definitely confident that we'll reach our goal and if not exceed it.
So coming up, it is February 28th, which is Saturday morning in St. Petersburg. So, and that one we're going to be talking to Heather about in just a minute, but let's talk about all the other ones that are going on. If, for example, the people that are listening don't live in St. Petersburg or they want to go to a different walk, let's talk about Sarasota first.
Sure. Well, yes, the one in Sarasota is coming up on March 21st. 21st in Payne Park. It's actually the third year that we're hosting that event. It's free to attend. The public can come, but we definitely encourage everyone to sign up ahead of time on www.guidedogswalkathon.org. Sign up to fundraise, get a team started, sign up as an individual, set a goal, and start fundraising for that walk.
Let's talk about the history of the walkathons. How did this all start, and why did you think a walkathon was the way to raise all the money that you needed? Well, it's not all the money you needed, but a good part of it.
Yeah, we're about 10% of our annual budget now, which the walkathon brings in. Traditionally, we've had these walkathons. In 1986, a group of volunteers got together, and they decided to kind of walk around the grounds of Palmetto, right around our main campus, went door to door, and raised about $15,000 doing that. So
Wow. Then
traditionally, yeah, a lot of money for about 50 volunteers.
Yeah, it is.
Annually after that, they kind of just kept on doing that year after year, and I guess Southeastern Guide Dogs caught on that a walkathon is a great way to raise money. So we took it off campus and went to the Palmetto Fairgrounds. From 1986, it's grown in to be our largest annual fundraiser of the year, and since 2012, we have gone from one walkathon to now seven walkathons, and we're growing year by year.
Let's talk about where all those walkathons are.
All right, well, let's see if I can list them all.
Okay.
We start out in Bradenton. The series starts on February 21st and runs for about 8 weeks. Then we move to St. Petersburg. Then we go up to the Villages in Central Florida, down back to Sarasota, which we have mentioned, over to Orlando, which is a brand new event this year, back down to Fort Myers, which is a brand new event this year again, and then we end the series in Tampa.
I know a lot of people, I'm one of these people that I want to be involved, but I don't think that I'm a good fundraiser. What are some of the other ways that we can get involved? We can come to the walkathon, but if you know, going out and asking our friends for money isn't the thing, what are some of the other opportunities?
Definitely, you don't have to be a fundraiser. We definitely encourage it because the walkathons are our largest annual fundraiser of the year. But like you said, you can come out and walk. Encourage your friends and family and neighbors to just come out with you. It's a great introduction to Southeastern Guide Dogs because,
right,
as you can see, we're not only in this local area. We extend out to the Villages in Orlando and Fort Myers. So we have a larger footprint than just this local area. So if you're looking to get involved in us and you don't really know who we are, the walkathons are a great place to start. And we encourage you to bring your dogs to the walk if you have one, but it's also not required. If you're a dog person but don't have one, this is a great place to get your dog fixed. But you can come out and walk at the event. You can also volunteer at the event, be a day of volunteer. We have many kind of 2 to 4 hour positions for you to get involved that day. And we also have a volunteer planning committee. We're already in search of new people to join our committees for the 2016 season. We have people who do everything from recruiting teams and sponsors to planning all the logistics and activities and entertainment of the events.
Well, I think it's really nice that you invite people and encourage people to come out and check out who you are, because sometimes you don't even know how it is or what it is about the organization that's really going to catch on for you. And this is a good way to explore that and to see, as you say, what we're all about.
Oh, absolutely. And I think an early morning with a bunch of dogs and you're out there with 1,000, 2,000 or 3 other people who really care about the same cause that you do, it really inspires you to become even further involved.
I know that we're going to be talking to Heather, and she is specifically involved with the St. Pete Walk. Is that correct?
That's correct. She is our operations chair on the St. Pete Walkathon Committee. So we have about 25 volunteers who really spearhead these events in each community, and then we have a staff supporting them along the way.
So now we're talking about you behind your back. It will really get a chance to talk to you to your face right now.
Excellent, thanks.
You do a lot of the organizational work for this St. Pete Walk.
I do. Yeah, actually, this is my second walkathon season that I've been a part of the organization and helping plan the event in St. Pete.
Is this like the biggest fundraiser? Of course, I want to hear that, because the one that we're involved with, you know, you want it to be the biggest, the best. Is that how it usually works out or not?
Yeah, kind of.
I know, of course. Yeah.
Yeah, we were very successful last year, and this year we're expecting about 3,500 walkers. And our goal is to raise about $185,000 just in the St. Pete event alone.
As I said, I don't always think of myself as the best fundraiser, but I like to bring people to the walk and let them experience the, it sounds so silly, but the magic of this organization, because that's really what I feel about it. And then let them be drawn to the part of it that they feel comfortable with.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree. We offer a lot of different aspects to the event. Like you said, just bringing people down. There's family events taking place, activities to for the whole family if that's your interest. And then there's also a way to be connected. There's information that's given out about Southeastern and how you can get involved if interested. And one of the best ways we had talked about raising money was, you know, we sell the raffle tickets. We can sell those on site. And one of the great things this year is that there will be doing an actual drawing city event and then a big one at the end of the series.
Really? I didn't realize that because I was told when we were selling these tickets that the $10,000 would be drawn at the last event. I didn't realize there were drawings throughout the whole series of walks.
Yeah, it's actually new this year. There will be a $1,000 local drawing done at each city's
walk. I didn't know that. That's awesome.
Yes. Yeah, and then you're also entered in the $10,000 cash prize at the end of the walk series.
I think that's the easiest way for me anyway to raise money is to sell those raffle tickets because it's a great way for me to reach out and go, you know, you could win $10,000.
Absolutely, and people are always excited to contribute to this cause, but
yeah.
You know, when there's a chance that, hey, you know, for $5 or
right.
five for 20, that I would have a chance to,
right.
you know, take advantage of some
I
of that as well.
I know exactly what you're talking about. Yeah.
It is a nice way to connect to the cause.
Well, let's talk about the very day of the walk. What time does it start? Where exactly? People probably heard Vinoy Park. If they haven't been there, tell us exactly where that is in St. Petersburg.
It's a really great location that's down on the waterfront. It's actually just past the Vinoy. The location is the Vinoy Park, just past the Vinoy Hotel, past the marina. We call it the kind of the mall area. There is, there's parking in the downtown area, which is nice and convenient. But festivities begin around 9:30. About 10:45, we do an opening ceremony. 11 o'clock is the kickoff to the walk itself. Everyone can kind of do it at their own pace. So the ones with the little dogs and the little kids can take their time and enjoy it. Or the ones that are fast walkers, they can, you know, jump ahead to the front of the pack. And we'll do the raffle drawing approximately at 12 p.m. We usually wrap up about 1 o'clock. We plan to have some live music available throughout the day and other fun activities for the kids.
And there are just a zillion dogs there, which is very fun for people who are dog lovers.
It sure is. It's a great opportunity for the whole family to bring. It's usually a really nice day, a really
yes.
nice time of the year to bring your animals out, your dogs as well, and get them to experience some of the fun as well.
Nina Iannotta has been our walkathon manager and our guest from Southeastern Guide Dog today. And we just got done talking to Heather Rakowski. We are just excited to see you both down there. Excited to see Michael Jernigan there, Andy Kramer, everybody we've talked to this morning.
We're really excited about putting on a quality event and raising money for Southeastern Guide Dogs.